Are you in Vancouver, Riku?
Yes, I'm in Vancouver. I'm on Green College on campus.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, not much fun coming to Vancouver and then not being able to see anybody.
Yeah, that is very true. But at least I have a lovely roommate who's doing political science. So we discuss a lot of stuff from physics to political science. So I at least have some people to survive this COVID.
How do they do dinners there now? It's not in a big dining hall and you just go and pick up.
Exactly. So there has been no like formal, you know, communal dinner or whatsoever. So, right. And then after health protocols were announced, we no longer have any like, social events at all. So we can only have like Zoom kind of events.
Right.
You know, some people are getting creative and, you know, they do like, you know, online, like, trivia nights and stuff, but
again, what else? Share screen. You can see the wiggles in the top right and lower left corner of the screen. Good. Actually, let me try it there, which was more in the middle of my screen, see if that also works. Top right, bottom left, can you still see it?
Yep.
Good. Makes it a little bit easier for me. Okay, so Penrose diagrams. Oops. Okay, the Penrose diagrams was basically Penrose's attempt to try and see more of the space-time and of the structure of the space-time and so forth. And in particular, what he was most interested in about was the causal structures of space-time. You know, how can one piece communicate with another via causal signals, non-tachyonic signals, or with light rays and so forth. And the usual way of writing down the metrics and so forth, it becomes a little bit unclear as to what exactly is related to what. Now, if one has some metric, one can look at a conformally related metric . Actually, one usually puts a square in there. And one can show that the null curves and the null geodesics of both is the same. It's of course easy to see that a null tangent vector will have the same length in both of these, because the length of the tangent vector is that. And if this is equal to zero in one of them, then it's going to be equal to zero in the other. Phi doesn't matter. Furthermore, one can always rescale the parameter along the curve, ds or d lambda, whichever you want to call it. The affine parameter, as it's called, along a null curve for a geodesic. One can rescale that basically by phi along that geodesic and show that the geodesic equations are identical in the two spacetimes as well. The only thing that changes is this parameterization along the curve. So the null structure of both spacetimes is the same. And he decided to use that in order to make things a little bit clearer as to what the null structures of these various spacetimes were. And he started with flat spacetime. Well, we know what the metric is for ordinary standard Minkowski. Now, this isn't the most useful way of doing things, so we can write the spatial part in polar spherical polar coordinates. where the omega squared is just the metric on the surface of a sphere, of a unit sphere. We can now define null coordinates. In such a way that little u equals t minus r. These are null coordinates which are either right movers for r greater than zero or curves that go into the future as r goes to infinity. Whereas v minus r are curves that go into the past as r goes to infinity. R is always positive, of course, in spherical polar coordinates, so we don't have to worry about the negative guys. So this becomes dt squared. Where's the razor? Du dv minus v minus u over 2 quantity all squared d omega squared. Now, if we write capital U is equal to some function of little u, then capital U will also be a null coordinate. For example, if I wrote it like this, then d capital U is f primed of little u times d little u, and d little v is g primed of little v dv, or du equals d capital U over f primed of f inverse of capital U. And similarly for V. So the metric now just becomes ds squared is equal to d capital U capital V over f primed g primed written in terms of capital U and capital V. So both capital U and capital V are now still null curves. If I hold capital U fixed and theta and phi fixed, then as I change capital V, I'm going along the curve T minus R is equal to a constant, which is a null curve. Dt by ds equals dr by ds. So one doesn't change the conformal structure by doing this kind of a transformation. And his idea was to define new coordinates such that little u is equal to the tangent of capital U and little v is equal to the tangent of capital V. So u minus infinity, little u going to infinity corresponds to minus pi by 2. Less than capital U less than pi by 2. So what this transformation has done is it's collapsed the whole capital U, little u, little v coordinates down to a finite size. Little u and little v go from minus pi by 2 to pi by 2. And the nice thing about that is I can draw that on a piece of paper. Having little u and little v going from minus infinity to infinity is very difficult to draw on a piece of paper. Plus, there's a lot of wasted pages, a lot of wasted area, because it doesn't look very much different as I get out to infinity. So what's d little u is then equal to the derivative of tan of capital U, which is 1 over cosine squared of capital U times du. And similarly, dv is 1 over cos squared of v, capital V, d capital V. So the metric becomes ds squared equals 1 over cos squared u. Capital U cos squared capital V d capital U d capital V. Brain, don't do this to me. D capital V minus, well, R is little u minus little v, which is tan of capital U, sorry, capital V minus tan of capital U over cos, not over cos yet. Squared d omega squared. But tan is equal sine of v over cos of v minus sine of u over cos of capital U, which is equal to sine of V minus U over cos of V cos of U. Notice we get a 1 over cos of V cos of U in R. And we get a 1 over cos squared V cos squared U in this part. And so the metric then becomes ds squared equals 1 over cos of V cos of U squared as a conformal factor, d capital U, d capital V, minus sine of V minus U squared, d omega squared. Now we can define a new time. There was, I forgot to. One half R is V little V minus little U over two. And we finally get that D S squared equals one over cos capital V cos capital U squared D T squared minus D R squared minus sine squared R over four sine squared of twice R over four times D omega squared. But this is just the metric of three sphere. Namely, this is a sphere in four dimensions. Every time you add a dimension, you add another sine squared, etc. So this metric here. Now R goes from U goes from pi by two to minus pi by two to plus pi by two. V goes from minus pi by two to plus pi by two. Little r equals zero, which is sort of the origin of the coordinate system, is where little u equals little v, and they're both and the sum of those is equal to, sorry, the difference of those is equal to pi by two. So what we find is that I can embed this thing in a cylinder. On one side of a cylinder, the back side I don't really need. So here's the front side. Each of these points represents a two-dimensional sphere. And the size of that two-dimensional, so each one of these points, there's, I've suppressed this two-dimensional sphere here, whose radius is sine of R. R is, or 2R is like this angle running around this two-dimensional sphere. So at this point, that two-dimensional sphere is zero. And at this point, that two-dimensional sphere is zero. So both of these points, if I were to draw, I suppress one of those extra dimensions, is like, you know, here's surface of the Earth. And this is R equals zero. And this is R equals pi, the north and south poles of the Earth. And these are the constant R surfaces. So this should all be rotated by 90 degrees to correspond to this picture. In time, there's nothing happening in time whatsoever. It's just dt squared. So all of flat space lies can be embedded conformally on this three sphere crossed with time. Now, as if u equals pi by 2 and v equals pi by 2, that's little u and little v equals infinity. And if I take t equals constant, that means that little r goes to infinity and t stays a constant. So this point here is this single point here, u equals pi by 2, and v is anything. Corresponds to this null geodesic here. It starts out with zero radius. It's a little sphere of light, starts off at zero radius over here, because this is the south pole of that sphere. Expands and then recontracts back to zero radius over here. V equals constant, which is V equals pi by 2, and u is anything, corresponds to this curve here. Again, this corresponds to a sphere that starts out with zero radius, like at the north pole here. That sphere of light then expands and recontracts and goes back to zero radius over here. So if I were to suppress time and were to suppress one dimension of space, it's like this situation where this is r equals zero over here. This is r equals pi over here. These are the null rays. So in this thing, that represents a light flash having gone off down here, expanding out, and then recollapsing down to r equals zero over here. This is the boundary. This represents little v equals minus pi by 2. Little v equals minus infinity. So outside here has got nothing to do with flat space time. It's this region in here that is our Minkowski space. If we look at null rays that come in from infinity in flat space time, they must have originated somewhere on here. Because remember that for radial null rays, this thing represents each of these u constant or v constant represent a null ray, which travels in the RTR direction. So an incoming null ray from infinity looks like this. Goes through R equals zero, and then comes out on the other side of the sphere. So this is a null ray that's come from here, gone up there, then come out on the other side. Starts up here, comes down here, then goes back out on the other side. A null ray, which is not directly aimed at the origin, will be something that looks like this. But when it's sitting in here, it's traveling around that sphere that's sitting at that point. So this light ray is coming in here, traveling around the sphere, actually half a time once again, and then comes back out here again. So on this diagram, it would be a ray that would come down here, wrap its way around, and then come back out to infinity and look like this. So null rays always start out and end up along these surfaces. These are called null infinity. Null infinity. And we notice that there's two of them. There's a null infinity in the past from which null rays come, and there's a null infinity in the future to which null rays go. And Penrose gave them names. This he called scry plus, plus for plus infinity. And this he called scry minus. Now you wonder, where in the world does the name scry come from? That's script I. But just to confuse you, when you're typing a text, calligraphically, what he actually used was backslash cal j, which looks something like so. This is scry plus, and this is scry minus. I'm not sure where he got, why he called it scry rather than, let's say, cal j, but scry ends with a vowel, so you can all lump it together into one word. So if you look at the diagrams, even in his original paper in the Bethe Rencontre in the 1960s, you have a symbol that looks like this, whereas script I looks something like this. And he doesn't use that symbol. Anyway, he gave names to this point, these points as well, this point here, this point here, and this point here. And there he again used I, but in this case he used a Roman I, and he called this one I minus, standing for infinity. He called the scry also, the I was supposed to stand for infinity, so script I was supposed to build null infinity, and normal Roman I was supposed to be time-like infinity. So any time-like curve, well, not any time-like curve, but most time-like curves in all time-like geodesics start off here. No matter which direction they're going, no matter how they're traveling, they all start off at this point, which tells you that this point is highly pathological. everything in the past, except null rays, start off at one point. If you look at the conformal transformation, you find that at these points, the conformal transformation looks like cos squared capital T, cos to the fourth capital T. And in fact, the conformal factor depends on exactly which direction you come into that point from. So at that point, the conformal factor is highly pathological. Similarly, at this point, that's where all null geodesics go to. So if one draws a null geodesic in the space-time, all null geodesics look something like this. They may also circle around, because remember, each point in here is actually a two-sphere. So they may actually circle around that two-sphere at the same time as they're going up in time. So these are time-like. Geodesics. They all start at I minus and they all end up at I plus. So this isn't a very good diagram for one to be able to figure out what actually happens if one is looking, let's say, at the time-like curve, because everything gets squeezed out down here and up here. Even if that geodesic started from infinity, it all gets squeezed out here. It looks as though it starts from R equals zero. As though it started from the origin of the coordinate system. It didn't. The conformal factor has just squeezed everything down into that, these two points along the R equals zero line. So I minus is the origin of all time-like geodesics. I plus is the, what does one call it in the future? It's not the origin. I guess one could call it the goal of all time-like geodesics. And I zero is the origin and goal of all space-like geodesics. And then scry minus is the origin of all null geodesics. It's actually a sphere. So these null geodesics could come in from different directions, and one can actually distinguish in this diagram which direction they're coming in from. And scry plus is the goal of all again, it's got a direction. So each one of the points on scry plus is actually a two sphere, giving you the direction in which that null geodesic either comes in or goes out from. Did I go too quick? Okay. So, I can't even spell. Now, if flat space were the only thing that this was useful for, it would have been a pretty useless exercise. Because, you know, flat space isn't all that difficult to understand. However, it turns out that at infinity, basically almost all metrics which become asymptotically flat, in other words, as you go far enough away from them and, you know, are going to infinity, they look like flat spacetime, which is what Schwarzschild looks like. You know, 1 minus 2m over r. dt squared minus dr squared over 1 minus 2m over r minus r squared d omega squared. As r goes to infinity, this metric becomes flat space-time. Because 2m over r goes to zero, and that just looks like dt squared minus dr squared minus r squared d omega squared. Now, we know we can also define null coordinates little u is equal to t minus r star, which is where r star equals dr over 1 minus 2m over r, which is r plus 2m log of r over 2m minus 1. This, by the way, is usually called tortoise. Because if one is traveling at a constant velocity along r star, in r, the actual physical circumference coordinate, you go slower and slower and slower as you get closer and closer to the horizon. So John Wheeler gave this the name of tortoise coordinate, because it goes slower and slower and slower. And v equals t plus r star and ds squared equals 1 minus 2m over r du dv minus r squared dr. Not, what am I doing? Where's eraser? There's eraser. Now, in this case, little u and little v going to minus infinity or infinity near the horizon just give you the horizon, r equals 2m. So little u going to minus infinity gives you the horizon, and little v going to plus infinity gives you the horizon. So that's not really what we want to do. We want to be able to describe the whole thing. Now, if I go ahead and in this one, define little u is equal to tan of capital U, and little v is tan of capital V, then from this guy, I'm going to get a 1 over cos squared U times cos squared V. From this guy, I'm going to get something like 1 over cos squared U times cos squared V, for at least for large R. Remember that u minus little u minus little v minus little u is r star, not r. So it's not quite right, but logarithm as you go to infinity becomes much smaller than r. Logarithm of r is much smaller than r, so you can more or less neglect it. But as little u and little v go to minus infinity, you just get to the horizon. And little u and little v going to minus infinity is capital U and capital V going to minus pi by 2. So that's not really a useful way of describing it. But we know that we have the Kruskal coordinates, capital U hat, is equal to E to the minus U, little u over 4m. Minus 4n and v hat is plus we can define the Kruskal u and v like this. This is good near the horizon because in these coordinates, one gets that ds squared is e to the minus r over 2m over r. Over 2m, this is r d u hat d v hat minus r squared d omega squared, where u times v is equal to r minus 2m, r over 2m minus 1 times e to the r over 2m. So near r equals 2m, this capital U and capital V are very nice coordinates. That's this term here just becomes something like capital U times capital V minus 1 or something like that. But as you get to near r equals infinity, this term is a mess. Sorry. This term, this term is a mess. You know, it doesn't behave properly as I get to little r equals infinity. So instead of doing something like this, what I have to do is I have to choose u hat such that near u hat equals zero, such that I have to choose u hat. Sorry, I have to, yeah, I have to cut, choose u hat. U hat. Near u hat equals zero. So let's call that u tilde. And equal to little u for large u hat, or little u going to, well, in this case, minus infinity. So if little u gets out to minus infinity, which means that we're heading out to towards infinity, then I choose a new function, which is u hat near zero, and is u as we get out farther. So this one, so this actually, or u goes to infinity. So this one for near u equals zero, and this one out near infinity. Then we can define u tilde is equal to tan of u. And similarly for v, is equal to tan of v. And again, uses the conformal factor, cos squared capital U cos squared capital V is the conformal factor. Again, minus pi by 2 less than capital U less than pi by 2. And again, I can draw the important points on this diagram. And why don't I haul out the diagram that I've already done? Let me, what do I want to do? I want to stop this chair. And then I want to share this one. And here we have the conformal diagram for Schwarzschild. So, let me annotate this. What do we have here? Okay. So this out here is scribe plus. So any null ray that comes in from infinity or goes out to infinity ends up at that scribe plus. Or there's another scribe plus over here. These two are completely different. They're not the same. They're completely different scribe pluses. Similarly, the origin of all null rays is either out here or out here. Notice that any null ray which starts off out here can never get into here, because if it did so, it would have to be traveling faster than light. Because light rays, their maximum velocity of light rays is 45 degrees on this diagram. And to get from here into here is impossible, and maintaining the slope always less than 45 degrees. Similarly, any light ray coming from here can never get into here. There are light rays that can circle. Remember, each one of these points represents a two-sphere. So the light ray could have components around that two-sphere. So as you get out to infinity, they're always look radial. A light ray could do this. Let me use a different color. A light ray could do this, circle around, and head back out to there. Over here, it's actually part of this. This looks like a time-like ray, though slope is less than 45 degrees. But part of its velocity is now in that two-sphere that each one of these points represents. So it's traveling not only in this in U and V, it's also traveling in theta and phi direction. So from the U and V point projected onto U and V, it looks as though it's traveling in, it's traveling slower than light. Or a null ray could do this. These two points, R equals zero, in the past and in the future, there are two of them. In these coordinates, one occurs for negative u and v, and the other one occurs for positive u and v, capital U and capital V. These are both singular. So even in the original metric, the curvature tensor blows up as you get near those areas. The square of the curvature tensor blows up. These are genuine singularities in the center of the black hole. So if these null rays come along and they cross this horizon, these lines represent R equals 2m, which is the horizon. If they cross that horizon, then they're forced into the singularity. somewhere along the singularity. R equals zero is not a single point. R equals zero is time, as a time-like surface. It's not a space-like surface. In other words, all of the points, it's a space-like surface, not a time-like surface. So null rays can go into this, but null rays can't get out. To go out, they would have to travel backwards in time. Similarly, null rays could originate in this past singularity and go out of the space-time. It could go out in two ways from the space-time. It could go out in this part of space-time, which is connected to one infinity, or it could go out in this part of space-time, which is connected to the other infinity. These regions can never communicate with each other, because in order to do so, the slope would have to be bigger than 45 degrees, and any light ray has to have a slope of less than or equal to 45 degrees in this diagram. H minus and H plus represent the horizon. R equals 2m. There's a past horizon out of which things can come into the external space-time, and a future horizon into which things can go from our space-time. They're not connected with each other. There's no way you can go from the future horizon to the past horizon without going backwards in time. Similarly, there's another future horizon over here and another past horizon over here. And again, you can't communicate with them. None of these things with pluses can communicate with any of these things with minuses in them. These points, let me use a different color. These points are highly singular. In flat space time, this embedding was on a nice smooth space time. So the conformal metric, there was no problem with it. These points were simply the poles of, you know, a two sphere, of a three sphere. And that's a perfectly nice place to be. In Schwarzschild, derivatives as you come over here blow up. So even in this space-time, these are not regular points. Even in the conformally transformed space, these are not regular points. I plus and I minus are even worse. You know, both the conformal factor and the space-time factor go totally kablooey. Remember, this point here represents R equals infinity out here and represents R equals zero from in here. So these points here are also highly singular. It's almost impossible to describe what the space-time in those the vicinity of that look like. It depends on what direction you approach it. If you approach from in here, this point seems to be at infinity. If you approach on a space-like curve from in here, this point seems to be at R equals zero inside the black hole. So it's, you know, almost these, the metric at these points is just a complete mess. Even as you approach the surface, scry plus and scry minus, derivatives of the metric itself is well defined there, but derivatives of the metric blow up as you get near those surfaces. So they're not very well behaved in those areas either. On the other hand, these are great. You just, for determining causal structure, you just look at it and you say, okay, something from here can never get out. Because to do so, it would have to travel faster than light. Anything here, the only thing it can do is to go into the singularity r equals zero. It can't get out. No matter how it moves, it has to end up at r equals zero, where the curvature blows up. Anything in here has to have come from r equals zero. There's nowhere else it could have come from. Anything in here cannot communicate with anything in here. Each of these points, as I said, represents a sphere. The sphere on the horizon is not equal to zero. The horizon has a far, you know, in the regular space-time as r equals 2m. In this conformal transformation, it's not capital R equals 2m, but it's capital R equals some finite something or other. So this point here represents a two-sphere. If I look along this space-like surface here, I'm going to get a two-sphere that starts off at zero over here, gets bigger, gets smaller, doesn't go to zero, then gets bigger again, and then gets smaller again. So this is like, you know, the Flom metric. Whereas when it went through the throat of the Flom metric, it got smaller and smaller and smaller, and then at a finite radius, r equals 2m, it started to get bigger again. That's exactly what happens here. If one takes time-like surfaces and runs them into the future, the width of that throat must get smaller and smaller, because by the time we get up here, it's pinched off. So the space-time looks like this. And then it looks like, whoops, this. And then it eventually pinches off as time goes along. And these are singular points. And you can just look at this diagram and read all of that off. No calculations necessary, which is really nice.
Excuse me. Could you draw the very last diagram again? I don't know. On my screen, I cannot see any of your annotations at all.
You can't see any of the annotations?
No, I cannot see. I'm not sure about.
Is that true of everyone?
Yeah, I don't see any other like writing on it either. I've just been like following, like I can see the cursor. So I've just been following.
Yeah, I know.
That's
I
what
know.
I was saying. Yeah, exactly.
I understand. I don't understand.
I'm not totally sure, but maybe the annotations would show up in the recording, but I'm not totally sure.
Yeah, I think they will show up in the recording, but they should also show up on your screen.
Yeah, yeah.
Why in the world are they not showing up on your screen? Nope. All right, let me go back to my previous share. All right, let's stop this annotation. Go to the whiteboard and share. Okay. Let me draw the diagram here again. So this is H plus, H minus, R equals 0. Square plus, square minus, square plus, square minus, I zero. So this last, what I was doing in this last one was, if I take a surface that runs through here, let us say, and I do the Flom kind embedding, I get something that at least near the middle looks something like this. Where if I go right through that, this is R equals 2M. That's the maximum width of the throat. In the conformal picture, that's something like that. But if I go through here, I will again be able to draw an embedding kind of diagram. But this radius of the throat will be R less than 2M. And the further up I push this, it pinches off. So basically, as I go up in time along these time-like surfaces, the radius of this throat gets smaller and smaller very rapidly. Solar mass black hole about 10 microseconds. And eventually they hit R equals 0, at which point one gets two disconnected slices. What do I want? Draw. So here's a space-like slice, and it's going to look like this. the two parts of that space-like surface disconnect from each other. This, remember this, I'm drawing this embedding. So this is a little circle, which is supposed to represent the sphere, which each one of these points represents. Over here, that sphere has gone to zero. And that sphere looks something like this. So if one looks at this from the usual point of view, namely that one is living on at some instant of time along a space-like surface, that one can go as one goes into the future, one finds here that this space-time looks as though it has this throat through which you could go, it would look like. You know, if this were constant, I could just travel along here and get out the other side. Unfortunately, this throat is highly dynamic. And it rapidly gets smaller, the radius of the throat rapidly gets smaller. And it goes so fast that there's no way in which you can get through the throat before it pinches off on you and squeezes the life out of you. And after it's pinched off, you can't go anywhere because you've just fallen off the edge of the universe at r equals zero. One of the things in numerical relativity is that infinities are nasty to calculate. Computers don't like handling infinities. However, one looks at this diagram, one says, okay, I don't have to have it infinite. I can make my slices of constant time do something like this. Do something like that. Why does this keep switching off? Do something like this, and then bend them down. Remember, as I'm going up here, time is going to infinity in the original space-time. So these slices are curving upwards in time over here so that the going from one slice to the next could be, you know, 1 second or 1 year or 10 to the ninth years, whatever you want. Here, these slices are going to crowd together more and more so as you get to r equals zero. So inside here, between one slice to the next, maybe only a nanosecond has gone by. Whereas out here, 10 to the ninth years have gone by. As you can imagine, this coordinate system is a rather pathological coordinate system, because somewhere or other, one has to make the transition from going, you know, 10 to the ninth years between two slices to nanoseconds between slices. As these slices squeeze closer and closer together. And so what one tends to do then, if one does this numerically, is one gets singularities occurring along the horizon. The space-time, the coordinates sort of tear apart right around the horizon. And so people were trying this for a while, but they always ran into troubles out near the horizon, doing this kind of stuff. Mm. I've just put on some notes, and a brief, more or less one page of notes on this. I also put on some notes where I do the derivation for the Vida metric. You had a look at this metric in one of the assignments where this is M is a function of V. And if M is a step function, where that's the Heaviside step function, where that's the Heaviside step function, zero if V is less than zero, one if V is greater than zero, then that corresponds to a massless dust. In other words, pressureless matter shell collapsing. To a black hole. And for that, the Penrose diagram looks like that's supposed to be a straight line representing R equals zero. Sorry, I can't get it, draw it very straight. Then at R equals zero, you get a singularity. Here is the future horizon. Here is the matter. Collapsing in to form the black hole. And then infinity. Oops. Looks like this. So this null matter comes in, has to come from infinity. All light rays come from scry minus. All light rays have to come from scry minus. This is what the matter looks like in this conformal diagram. Collapses. When it finally collapses down to zero radius, you get a singularity. It's a space-like singularity. It occurs by an appropriate choice of time all at one time. R equals zero beforehand, well, this is just the R equals zero of flat space-time. So inside here, we have flat space-time. And then out here we have Schwarzschild. So one can again do the same kind of conformal transformation to get this kind of diagram. And now one can simply read off the diagram all kinds of interesting information. For example, inside it's all flat, so everything looks perfectly normal. Nothing strange is happening inside. But if you wait a little bit too long, you'll never be able to get out. What happens is that if you look at a light ray that's emitted, let's say from here, that light ray will expand outwards as we go out at 45 degrees, which is light. And then suddenly at this point, the radius, instead of keeping on expanding, contracts. And along this whole line, R goes, the radius goes to zero. So you'll get a maximum radius for this light ray just as it hits this point, and then it collapses down to zero radius and runs into the singularity. And you can just basically look at this diagram and read it off. The one problem with people using these Penrose diagrams is precisely all of these horrible stuff that happens. At points here, here, and even along the surface. Namely, as you get near the surface, derivatives of the metric start to diverge in this conformally transformed picture. So one has to be really, really careful about how one handles these Penrose diagrams. But they've proven to be extremely useful in, you know, just being able to geometrically read off features of many of these solutions. Okay, so that's a quick introduction to Penrose diagrams. You can do Penrose diagrams for other spacetimes. Cosmological spacetimes, for example, they tend not to be terribly interesting, but some of them are. Anti-de Sitter space, infinity turns out to be space time-like. And then you can get de Sitter space. Infinity is periodic, basically. So it never does go to zero as you get out far enough. But there you have singularities in the past and in the future. Anyway, there's a whole, one could study these diagrams a lot more than we are going to hear. I wanted to introduce them so that when you run across them and you're reading in the literature and so forth, you aren't completely befuddled by what in the world they're talking about. Okay. Time is up. I'll let you know on Tuesday what I decided as to whether or not to do cosmology or to do Penrose ADM formalism, initial value formalism. All right.
Are you going to post the assignment tonight, or is that coming out later?
It'll probably be a little bit later.
Okay.
So did you a week from Tuesday? What's Tuesday? 23rd? Tuesday is the 23rd, it is. So it'll be due on the 30th.
Okay, nice, thanks.
Classes end what, on the 14th?
I think it was like the 8th or 9th or something like that. But I'm not sure.
I don't know what they
did.
I mean, they started the term a week late because of COVID. And I don't know whether they've adjusted for that or not. Anyway, we'll find out. All right. See you on Tuesday.
Thanks. Have a good one.
Thanks. Thank you.
Yeah, let's see if I can save all this stuff. Mm.